Welcome back. With Halloween next week, we thought we'd ask, do you believe in ghosts? All of his young life, Eric Newsom was haunted by them. Growing up in Canton, Ohio, he had a recurring dream.
As I enter the path, I can see her, her outline in the moonlight. I step closer and start to see detail. A little girl in a blue dress. She's wet, like she's been in water. She's staring right at me, eyes wide, cold, and dark. When I'm only a few steps from her, she starts yelling at me. It sounds like gibberish. She never moves, never takes her eyes away from mine. As I come closer, she seems more and more irritated and frantic. When she's at the point she's screaming so loud that she's shaking, I wake up.
But awake, Eric still felt her presence, convinced she lived in a scary room in the attic. Was the little girl in blue an early sign of mental instability, or did the drugs he took as a teenager to keep her at bay land him on suicide watch in the mental ward of a hospital? And what about Laura, his best friend, who stayed with him through all of it? As Eric writes, she saved him from his imaginary ghost, but became one herself, dying way too young. Eric Newsom's new memoir, Giving Up the Ghost, a story about friendship, 80s rock, a lost scrap of paper, and what it means to be haunted, takes us from his teenage years as a high school oddball listening to Kiss and Brian Eno's music for airports, to the ghost tours he took as an adult armed with ghost-detecting meters looking for other ghosts in order to exorcise his own. It is a terrific read, and I'm not just saying that because Eric Newsom is now Vice President of Programming at National Public Radio, and he joins us from the NPR studios in D.C. Eric, welcome.
Hello.
And I don't mean this to be at all funny, but how are you doing in that studio there? Because you write, you are still afraid of closed doors.
Yes, but only in houses.
Okay.
That's the strange thing. And it generally is only in my house. I say that, yet last week I was in Las Vegas for work and I slept with the light on in the bathroom for some reason because it just kind of, that door bothered me and freaked me out a little bit.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, who still have that, I can't look under the bed at 1 o'clock in the morning because of, you know, fear of, I can't open the closet door because of the monster in the closet. So they're going to identify with this, but this went so deep for you. Try to explain the little girl in blue. How did she feel to you when you were a kid?
It is equally both a horrifying story for me to recall and the most normal thing in the world, because the thing I don't think people understand about this was normal to me when I was growing up, that there was this presence of this ghost in my life. Mm. The only things I ever really saw was really nothing. I felt things. I heard some noises, which I decided to attribute to being the ghost I saw in my dreams. And I kind of tailored my entire life around dealing with this. I moved up into the attic, which is something I'm still not quite sure why I decided that was a good idea. But I felt like I could be closer to her. Maybe I would kind of get this over with, whatever it's about. And I would schedule my life around making sure I wasn't near that door that she was behind, or I thought she was behind. I would sometimes spend hours staring at the door, working up the courage to just run up to it, throw it open, and see if something was on the other side that I could see before it disappeared. But then I also thought this was a normal teen life.
Right. And then as you become more of a teenager than a little kid, you're dabbling in some of the things kids around you are. It's not clear to me as a reader, did the drugs enter the picture because people were doing drugs? Or do you think you did drugs more because you had this thing you wanted to keep at bay?
I think there's some degree of truth to both of them. I think there's a lot of my friends did drugs, so I started doing drugs, but started doing drugs for a completely different reason. They did it because they were bored, and it was just something to do. And to me, it kind of gave me a break. Like, it wasn't that I wanted to feel good from drugs. I just kind of wanted to stop being so worried or stop feeling so isolated away from things.
Yeah.
And then at one point, rather late in my kind of downfall, one of the things that kind of pushed me over the edge was someone at some point had stopped me from taking something because they probably just made it up on the fly, said, you'll see things that aren't there if you take that. And to me, that was actually a very appealing idea. If there was really a ghost there, I wanted to see her. I wanted to find out why I was going through all this terror.
Right.
What was the point?
Well, meanwhile, I mean, we'll get to where things got really unacceptable for everyone in your life and for you. Along the way, you know, you describe a life that's almost like a blue-collar American graffiti, you know, hanging out with Laura. Tell us more about her. What a wonderful friendship.
Yeah, it was very unusual. We had kind of had many mutual friends and had been kind of probably a very light degree of friends throughout high school until she went away for a year where she went to Europe, to Finland, actually, to be an exchange student, and kind of used that as her excuse to kind of reinvent herself or come out as to who she wanted to be. And she came back, this very visually stunning, shocking little punk rock girl in a very blue-collar town of Canton, Ohio, which that kind of thing just didn't happen in Canton. And she was well-read, she had heard lots of music, and all of a sudden she went from this mildly interesting person to the most fascinating person I'd ever met. And we spent many, many nights hanging out, and because we were 18 and we didn't have any money, we would just find things to do and find places to go. And in a decaying industrial place like Northeast Ohio at the time, you would often find abandoned warehouses, abandoned buildings, abandoned things, and you just kind of make them into your play places. And I was so driven to impress her or please her that she became kind of my only anchor to what was probably acceptable social behavior at all.
Well, and she was there when you eventually had to be hospitalized. You were suicidal, a combination of the drugs and the fact that this little girl in blue was not going away. In fact, she was showing up at inappropriate times. You ended up in a mental ward, and she was there for you with that. I want to hold the story right there, as mm-hmm. you do, and kind of do what you do, which is throughout the book, you kind of fast forward to a journey you went on as an adult to places where I had no idea, to places where people say ghosts gather. You kind of go on this pilgrimage to go to these different places to do what?
My stated purpose really was to see if I could find any ghosts. To me, it was shocking that, you know, ghosts had supposedly been around since there were spirits or souls, and that no one had ever really definitively established whether there was any truth to this or not. So I'm like, you know, I'm a journalist. I think like a journalist. I'm a skeptic. But at the same time, I have this fear of ghosts. So I'm going to put myself in these situations, and I'm going to either prove or not prove that what I'm seeing, experiencing, or what's happening is real in these places.
And so, Eric Newsom, you go to a prison in Ohio, a spiritualist community in upstate New York, Gettysburg National Park. It turns out, at all three, thousands gather to look for ghosts. Who knew there were ghost tours at Gettysburg? Maybe some of our listeners know. We're going to have more on what Eric found after a break. Eric Newsom, again, a vice president of programming at NPR. His memoir, Giving Up the Ghost. We've been listening to Brian Eno's music for Airports, the song that so inspired him, and we'll be back with more of his ghost tales in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with Eric Newsom about his fascinating memoir, Giving Up the Ghost. It's sort of a coming-of-age in the 80s story about his friendship with high school classmate Laura, who helped him get through a stint in a mental ward after school. He'd been abusing drugs, but he'd also been haunted since childhood by a ghost, a little girl in a blue dress. Eric Newsom eventually built a career. In fact, he currently is an executive with NPR. But Eric, you know, just before the break, we were talking about how, as an adult, you still had this fascination with and fear of ghosts. And so you travel to ghost hunts all around the country, including a deserted wildlife park along Clinton Road in New Jersey. Are there ghosts on Clinton Road in New Jersey?
Oh, there are hundreds of ghosts supposedly along, you know, and Clinton Road is kind of the ground zero for urban legends. You think of any kind of story involving something that happens on a dark, deserted road, and there's a Clinton Road version of it. And, you know, there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of different stories involving ghosts on that road. And I just said, okay, I'm going to hang out on this road all night long until I find a ghost or the night ends, whichever happens first.
Well, we know what happened first. I mean, it's the night ends. although you get the bejesus scared out of you along the way.
Yeah,
you also go to Lilydale, New York. This is a community completely of spiritualists. Tens of thousands of people go to this town in upstate New York to get readings and to get in touch with the dead.
Yeah, when you see Lilydale, your first impression is that these people are all completely nuts. They believe things that are very outsider. They think things and they take things almost as an assumption in conversation that you would find extremely odd. like they refer to themselves in we all the time, like we are going to go to get some dinner, and they're talking about themselves and their spirit posse that accompanies them everywhere they go. The various spirits, be they their great aunt or their mother or some Indian chief or whoever is tagging around with them, they all have several of them. But once you spend time with them, you realize that spiritualism is a religion. Well, actually, it's a religion where people believe that spirits are the intermediaries between God and people. And this is a religion that people come to through grief. And it's grief that you can identify and you can see. And the more time you spend with them, the less weird they appear. And you can start to understand that, hey, you know, I've had grief in my life, too. And this person isn't that bonkers.
Right. Well, you also go to Mansfield Reformatory in Ohio. The Shawshank Redemption was filled there. But also people come there for nighttime tours because allegedly it's haunted and the living are grabbed, punched, shoved, and pushed. Things are thrown and slammed. You didn't detect any of that. But you also go to Gettysburg National Park. Who knew? Well, maybe a lot of people knew, but I didn't know that after dark, there are also tours and people hunt ghosts using meters and digital cameras.
Yeah, the ghost hunting industry in Gettysburg is awe-inspiring as far as its size and depth and how many people use it. I mean, like, or participate in it, because you think that you're in Gettysburg with the kids and you're staying at some motel. You go around, you look at battlefields during the day. What do you do at night? You know, you get a pizza, you watch some pinball, and then you're sitting around watching TV. Or you could go out and you could hunt ghosts, and most people choose to go out and hunt ghosts. And you will stand in downtown Gettysburg and see literally dozens of groups go by on various ghost hunts. They have ghost hunts on horseback, on Segway scooters. Even the local, I think the Ramada Inn or the Quality Inn swears it has ghosts in it.
Yeah. Well, you take us on these side trips, incredibly entertaining. But ultimately, we have to go back to your storyline, which is profoundly sad. Because you come out of your hospital experience understanding after a lot of therapy that maybe your ghost, the little girl in blue, was a childhood, you know, maybe fantasy, but one that was exacerbated by the drugs, you know, and you accept that. You start to make your way with that understanding, you know, on your new adult life. And suddenly, out of nowhere, and we're not going to say how it happens, it's the one thing that I think readers might discover for themselves. Laura, your guide, your muse, your best friend through your childhood, is killed. And you discover that you didn't really know her very well.
Yeah, I spent probably more time with her at that period of my life than any other person, including my own family. And I realized how I walked away from that relationship with many more questions than I did answers. And to me, the whole thing kind of is connected. Whether there are ghosts and whether or not there really was a girl in the blue dress, or really there was something in the attic, or whether there's something in Gettysburg and Laura, they're all interconnected to me. And I didn't realize at first when I started working on this story, it was supposed to be kind of a romp of like this guy going to all these scary places and he's scared and let's watch him squirm and watch him hang around with odd people. And as I started to sit down and write the book, I started including all these little tidbits about why I was scared of ghosts. And it became very clear to me that as I was opening myself up to the possibility of interacting with a ghost in Gettysburg or Lilydale, that I was really opening myself up to remembering a history that I had pretty much stomped on and suppressed for the last two decades of my life, including my relationship with Laura. I spoke to her family when I wrote this book for the first time in 20 years.
Well, what happened was that when you were young adults, you're off to college, and she dies, you realize that she had best friends you didn't know about, best friends she went to see right after you dropped her off. People, I mean, this happens to people. You realize, wait a minute, how could she have this life I didn't know about? And I'm thinking, wow, she was so ephemeral. Maybe she was, in a funny way, your ghost.
Yeah. I mean, well, she definitely is now to this day. She's the ghost in my life. And she represents a part of me that both equally formed is responsible for me being who I am and is very different than who I am now. The interesting thing is it's very hard to admit that someone who had a profound impact on, in singular impact on your life, that you didn't have that same impact on theirs, that you were actually one of several people who probably had an impact on her?
Well, you wonder, too, if there seemed to be something for... I mean, she was almost like an angel in your life before she died. I'm wondering, does she haunt you? Or, in fact, do you get some solace from the fact that I just was so taken with her? You are now letting people know about this young woman who died way too soon.
Yeah, and I had a great deal of reservation about doing so and needed a lot of reassurance from her friends or other friends and her family that it was okay to do this, because I openly questioned whether or not what she would think of me doing this for someone who is obviously very guarded and very private. And the response I got from people was, she really was a unique person and you need to tell that story.
Yeah. Well, and besides, if she doesn't like it, maybe she'll let you know.
Hey, you know what? I people ask, are you still scared of ghosts? And I say, you know what I'm scared of? I'm scared that I am shaking something loose by writing this book and talking about this.
Are you still scared? Does the little girl in blue come visit you?
No, she hasn't been since Laura died. I've never had another dream.
Oh.
And that doesn't mean, in the book, I go back to my parents' old house, which is owned by another family now. And I walked to that house and I did not know what I was getting into. I didn't know what was going to happen when I opened that attic door. And I just remember opening the door and just kind of just sighing and wondering what terrorized me so much about that place. Because, I come to the realization in all this that I don't think places are haunted. I think people are haunted. And that when you go to a place like a prison or an old graveyard or some haunted building that you're sitting in alone at night for hours, you open yourself up to things. The place is just a facilitator. It's a vehicle for you. It doesn't really have anything in itself.
That's Eric Newsom. His book is Giving Up the Ghost, A Story About Friendship, 80s Rock, A Lost Scrap of Paper, and What It Means to Be Haunted. Eric, thanks so much.
Thank you.
As we listen to a little more from Brian Eno's music for Airports, which Eric says literally saved his life. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us to see what the week brings. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.